Hello and welcome to Coke TV Club. This is a very serious episode. Take it away, Justin.
A very special episode.
Last time on Coke TV Club.
Welcome to the Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before. And
but are they classic TV or is it cult TV?
Classic cult TV.
Classic cult TV.
Classic cult TV with Baylor.
Hi.
Angus.
Hello.
Mackenzie.
Hello.
Lisa.
I need to speak to somebody in charge.
Cass. Unfortunately, I'm not in charge, so you can't talk to me.
Yes, you are.
Jeanette.
Hi.
And I'm Justin.
And he's in charge.
Yes.
And we are watching
The West Wing. Part of the reason why I chose this is because later this year we're going to be doing The Thick of It. So this is a comparison. And partly because we're recording this in July 2026, where it's the 250th anniversary of the Yanks kicking out the Poms. So I thought it was appropriate.
Oh, God. Why are we celebrating?
because we got to see the Poms be pwned, I guess. I don't know.
And it led to that fantastic song, You'll Be Back.
What a random Hamilton reference for a movie that we haven't seen yet.
From someone who also just hasn't seen it in their personal life.
No, no, you made us watch it.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I love that song. I thought that was great.
Guess who got the Hamilton soundtrack for their birthday this week? Oh, my so goodness. Cute. My child.
Play that earworm song over and over.
Yeah.
So what is West Wing about?
Oh, basically, it's President Josiah Bartlett is the President of the United States of America. So he and the rest of his team at the White House are doing various political things, ranging from China and Russia are on tensions that could lead to nuclear war, all the way to if the President doesn't stop making fun of string beans, we're going to lose voters in the next election. The plot lines just range from either earth-shattering stuff or just random stuff. But I'm explaining this really badly because the actual series is very well done and it's very cinematic, and basically it's written by
Aaron Sorkin,
who's got a very specific writing style. It can be very funny, it can be very thought-provoking, it can be very heartwarming, and so all the writing is really top-notch. All the acting is really pretty good, and the cinematography makes it look like it's a film, and it's basically, sometimes it feels like it's got a huge neon sign pointing towards it saying, this is the best show on television.
There's a lot of actors that were in this that come up in other shows. Like, these were my gateway to a lot of different actors.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen them before this, and then this kind of propelled... Alison Janney, I'd never seen her in anything. She was a stage actor, wasn't she? And then she's more so than anything.
Yeah, because, like, half the cast were famous before this, and half the cast were famous because of this.
Yes.
So, So
it's a comedy.
Oh, no. It can be comedic, but no, it's dead serious.
Oh,
dry comedy, but it's not in the thick of it. It's very, take ourselves seriously. These are the hardworking people behind the White House.
It's more just the members of the team. I'm saying team instead of, I don't know, staff. That's the word. Some of the staff have senses of humour, and I do like the fact that some of the characters in the show are massive nerds. So I was going to pick an episode that had a small plot line about Gilbert and Sullivan, and it just reminds you, oh yeah, these are the most powerful people in US, and some of them are massive nerds. So I kind of love and hate this show, love it because it's so well written, but hate it because partly you have to be a very specific kind of nerd to watch this show. It's very much the characters, half of the plot lines are sold by them saying a really eloquent, very truth-filled speech that makes the other person go, oh, I guess you're right then. And you also have to be very fluent with late 90s, early noughties American politics. I picked an episode which I hope doesn't need to involve that. But the other half is the fact that the politics of the show is... Actually, I won't discuss in detail.
I was going to say, a lot of times, the politics in the show, sometimes it can be quite secondary, because it's just, a lot of it's about, we've got this problem, we need to solve this problem, how are we going to come together to solve it? It's obviously very political, but it doesn't get bogged down in the policy at times. Sometimes it does, but not all the time.
It's more, say, at the time when it was running, it's a very popular show for people who vote Democrat in the US.
Yeah.
And people who vote Republican, at the time, called it the left wing, because it kept promoting the Democrats as being always right, and Republicans being always wrong, or at worst, being wrong for the right reasons. And people who are for the left of Democrats just hate the fact that... I can't really describe it succinctly, but it's basically...
I think Bartlett was written as being a very... they kind of not deified him, but it was like he was very holier than thou. It was like he made all of the right decisions because he's such a great guy, and he's in the role because he's this knight in shining armor. Yeah. And I think that really, if the fact that if he'd have been Republican, no one would have cared. But if you know, but I think if he'd have been Republican, the Democrats would have cared. The fact that he was Democrat, Republicans cared.
Yeah, but it's,
at the end of the day, it's,
but it's also like say there's certain assumptions of the way politics works that are really awkward, especially looking back on it. Like, for example, it aired from 1998 to 2006. And in case you forgot, a very, very important thing that happened in American politics in that time period, after 9/11, they had to add a lot of terrorism plot lines. And so one of the plot lines was Bartlett deciding that they should assassinate a, I think it was like a, some big government person, someone in the Middle East.
Oh, wow.
And so, like, yeah, looking back on that, that's not good. Yeah, and there's a lot of political lines that either age badly or, in retrospect, especially after a decade of what's going on in the US right now, seem optimistic to the point of naive or even utopian.
Yes.
Oh, that's very common.
One important episode involved them replacing members of the Supreme Court. It doesn't matter the point, but the point is that looking at it after Trump decided to just throw in members of the Supreme Court willy-nilly, it makes it the plotline of the episode seem ridiculous because it would never happen like that in real life.
Yeah.
It's just maddening because, like I said, some of it's chased badly, some of it's definitely the assumptions around the politics in this episode don't work. I was thinking I would be yay close to being in a rant this bit of the I'm restraining myself because, yeah, I've been following American politics for a long while and for the past decade I've been basically going,
So. It's interesting with this show as well, is I know when it first came out, the whole point was that it was about the West Wing. It was the crew that kind of keep everything ticking behind the scenes. Yeah,
like originally the person wasn't even going to be a main character.
Yeah, that's it. So I think it was just that Martin Sheen came in and what do they say? He ate and left no crumbs. He just kind of went, like, he just came in and they went, oh, we need to give this guy more airtime.
One of the things I like about the show is also the huge long-line plot lines as well, which some of them actually like the fact that, for example, President Butler has MS. They don't reveal it. I was also, just before we go on, I had a lot of trouble picking which episode to do because a lot of the episodes that I really love require you to either know a lot about American politics or be familiar with the characters. So I'm hoping that this is a good compromise of the episode I did pick because I think it's got enough of the vibe to understand the show without needing to know either the personalities of the characters or this backstory of, like, one episode I could have picked involved the filibuster, which is a very American thing, and having to explain what the point is. And there's definitely a few things which require knowing American politics, which is really awkward. So instead I've got a relatively early episode, which has stuff in it, which is mostly timeless, but we'll see how it works out.
Yeah. So we've got two people who've watched the show.
Yes.
I do have to say that I didn't watch it as hardcore as Cass did. It would be kind of...
It's more, I watched them all in one go in a span of like a month.
You binged it,
Binged, it's like 2 months. But I did it 2014, before the current morass of American politics, so there was still optimism of like, oh, this is a nice series. And in retrospect, it's, I've been turning on its political messaging, especially in the really...
In that era, on Tuesday nights, I used to stay at Adrian's house. My now husband, he did night shift, so he'd leave for work at 10:30, and I'd be like, right, well, all I've got is this crappy TV with no streaming DVD, anything else like that. And that's how I got into West Wing and Sopranos, because they used to be on at 10:30 on a Tuesday night. So one would finish, the next one would start. So a lot of times I'd fall asleep during episodes and stuff, but that was kind of, I'd pick up as much as I could in the evenings. I got heavily invested, but it has literally been 20 years, if not more.
No, it finished 2 decades ago.
Yeah, and I never watched it after watching it live on Channel 9,
Yeah, so we've got two people who've watched a bit of it. Jeanette, have you seen it at all?
None
at all. Me probably is the same.
I feel like Jeanette is not going to enjoy this.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably very dry for you.
Baylor? Have you seen West Wing before?
No. I've never heard of it before.
Oh, yeah.
You've never even heard of it.
I remember I brought it up and it's like, why do they call it the West Wing? I'm like, because it's the West Wing of the White House.
Of the White House.
It's where the Oval Office is.
Yeah.
Didn't realise it was set in the White House. I knew nothing about this.
I've heard of it. I literally had
zero background knowledge.
It's got a few Martin Sheen and Rob Lowe.
Stop Churning.
Oh, yeah.
Probably one of her best roles.
The only words that I actually understood being said were Sopranos.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah.
I know
Martin Sheen, is he connected to Mr. Sheen, the people who do the window
washing? No, Mr. Sheen's actually John Howard in an animated form cleaning. It's a very old reference.
It looks like it, yeah.
No, Mr. Sheen is not John Howard. Mr. Sheen is Homer Simpson.
Mr. Sparkle.
Oh, I was thinking Mr. Clean.
Yeah, no.
It's the same. Yeah, Mr. Clean. Mr. Sheen is the Australian version of Mr. Clean. Okay.
Also, Dudley Hill, who went on to star in Psych.
Gus from Psych.
Yes, and
Kenzie's
also...
Kenzie's like, whatever, because...
Who's Gus?
Gus from Psych. Remember Psych?
Is that the friend?
Yes.
This is going to be a hard watch.
Yeah, it's also, I forget...
We're glad you two are going to have fun, though.
Not really. So one thing I did say about Mackenzie... One thing I did say to Mackenzie is this show was known for a lot of dashing up and down corridors with clipboards talking really fast. So if you do see that happen in this episode, you can yell drink. Because I've got to take out the Mr. Sheen. Oh, yeah, there you go. I was trying to Google him.
Why is that? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Autism is fine.
also, Elizabeth Moss, who went on to star in The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, and Mad Men.
She played the president's daughter. One of his daughters.
Alan Alder playing the Republican nominee for president.
Yeah.
Yes.
After MASH. That's hilarious.
Yes, the entire last season was a presidential campaign.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the kind of show this is.
Oh, dear.
Okay, well, I'd like to read to you what I actually did listen to from what you guys
were
saying.
Oh, what you wrote down.
I wonder what you're writing down. It seemed like a statement of some kind.
We're in trouble. Cinematic Aaron, top-notch, come up with actors, anything famous for anything hardworking, staff, nerds, episode powerful, kind of hate it show, eloquent, fluid episode is in detail, a lot of it political, running Republican, being Democrats, very deified role night, care, also awkward, 98, 26, plot lines, some looking at age badly, utopian Supreme Court, willy-nilly, real life, don't work, restraining myself.
You forgot the first line, which is, wow, 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 stop, stop, random stuff, cinematic Aaron top-notch.
This feels like when I used to have to take meeting notes in my early 20s.
This is literally what I was able to pick up on what you guys were talking.
This is a stream of consciousness stuff, isn't it?
No.
This is just words that I was able to latch onto.
Can we feed that to AI?
This is how AI is created, my friend. I am AI today.
Is,
The West Wing remaining character is also about the show. I love or be episode personalities. Forgotten point. Require stuff timeless. Hardcore 2014 awkward episode night stuff. Sopranos. Fall asleep heavily 20 decades. Channel 9. And that is my thoughts on The West Wing.
Yeah,
I should have kept this for the second part.
That's definitely going to be put on the tail end of the episode, slowly petering off as the episode
with everybody going, no, stop.
Yeah.
And now for a few words from our lunatic.
Baylor, can you please write an episode of West Wing as though it was Baylor reciting it for cult TV?
You said that entire list and we just ended with, as now, the weather.
I feel like there was a lot of hand cramp.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, it felt nice to actually write it. My brain went burr the entire time, but I don't know what you guys were saying.
Okay, let's get on and watch the episode.
We'll be back.
Oh, no.
You'll see.
And we're back. So, what did people think?
Oh, man, that last scene. I'm going to stay. I'm like, is there a second part? Or no. He's just going to stay on the line and make sure everything's all right.
It's a nice what if, as in what if the people in the White House were actually human beings.
Yeah.
It's a very nice hypothetical.
Yeah, that's a thing. Like I said, Yeah, retrospectively, it's very, very naive, optimistic, utopian.
Idealistic,
separated from reality, ahistorical, self-important, overly serious.
Oh, it's like, there's all these disasters everywhere, so the president's just going to step in, take his jacket off, and roll up his sleeves and sort it all out himself.
What a guy.
I know.
What a guy.
I used to remember that.
Yes. It's very American heck,
absolutely.
To me, it amounted to propaganda. It was basically propaganda.
And that's what it did get accused of being very propaganda.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why, even though the show itself is well written and stuff, just looking back on it, especially after a decade of whatever's going on in the White House now, is just really.
Well, even back then.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, there were several situations there, including the boat situation that the president stayed on the line for, that were directly caused by the blunders of the administration as well, in that episode. Like, they put the ships there to keep the fleet safe sort of thing, and kind of went, oh, we've got to keep this ship safe, and that was kind of more a priority, and then it backfired on them.
But that's part of the gravity thing, though. You see?
Yes,
that's the gravity of our decisions.
Yes.
It very much is.
That's what the protocol is. That's what they're supposed to do in this situation. Yeah. It's not like someone's made a stupid mistake.
No, Beeching was that. It was someone made a stupid mistake. Yeah. It was very, like...
But it's also like, oh, no, it's my fault because I, the president, am responsible for everything.
Yes, but there was no ending to that side story that was concluded happily. It was just like, nope, they've messed that one up, and now they've got a... That's it. End of story.
And they're all dead.
Which is probably quite realistic, I guess, in a way. Yeah. But but there's very much a holier-than-thou when it comes to other countries. It's we're meeting with this other country and we want to try and make them happy. But did you know that they're like, you know, and it's like, what?
Yes.
I'm sure that all of those countries are all sitting there going, oh, yeah, we're going to meet with the US. Did you know?
The whole side thing was just like,
Especially because I could correct a lot of wank that they just lied about.
There was no ending to that of someone going, what are you on about? That's not true.
You're supposed to be trained to be working in a diplomatic kind of situation. Why would you just spout this shit off when we're supposed to be playing nice with these people? So,
to be fair, that was a woman that was portrayed in other points in the episode as not being the most professional individual.
But I don't know. She is in the show, though, usually, because she's what, Josh's right-hand man, isn't she?
Yeah, she's his tiny.
Yeah, and she rises through the ranks over the course of the show, I think, doesn't she?
Yeah, pretty much. But not to give spoilers, but by the end of the series, they bring in who would be the next president, and she's basically the chief of staff for his wife. And so she's part of the political campaign, basically, there.
Yeah.
So, she's...
Because throughout all this, all we saw her do was basically talk about that rumour, the... They execute people and cut their heads off with scythes, which is just... wouldn't use scythes, that's stupid.
I love that's a factual error yet you're focusing
on. Well, no, it's just like, everything about it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then the scythe was just like, became so... stupid.
I think that was supposed to be ridiculous, however.
But there was no... It was never refuted. Yeah. No. It was never challenged.
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't know. I mean, I guess you and I are really the only people that have watched a lot of Aaron Sorkin, but do you believe he can write for women?
No.
I don't think he can. Because a lot of the women are literally ditzy, shrews, like that political PR lady, her whole thing is that she's brash and she gets in people's ways and she tells it how it is and then, you know.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
CJ's the only one that's actually written with some class.
Admittedly, I didn't hate her, though. Like,
I've
seen like a lot of women that are supposed to be like that in real life, and I would prefer to deal with her.
I wonder how you feel because, firstly, she leaves after the first season, and secondly, they bring in a character who's supposed to be this feminist. I describe her like a,
as in the social media person.
No, it's a new character. They haven't seen yet. They're bringing a new character who's basically like a feminist activist sort of thing, who ends up in a relationship with Josh Lyman, which.
Men writing female activism and feminism, already hate.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Men can't do it. Men don't understand what feminism is.
I missed the character who leaves the show. Sorry, which character left the show?
The lady at the very start that's like...
The one with the short, dark hair, who's the political consultant.
But yeah, so basically they try and put this feministy character in the show, and I'm wondering whether you'd hate this character with aplomb because of how she's just written to be simultaneously this feministy character, and yet she has hops for Josh Lyman, who treats her like crap.
Look, oh... Okay, no, I really hate that.
Yeah.
I have a genuine issue when people try and write women like that because they're always going to be the women that are pushing that narrative that either they contradict.
Yes, and or, that's often the case.
Or they're just really toxic. There is no in-between, whereas feminism's about equality for everyone, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
No. I was just going to say, I just did a quick thing on Aaron Sorkin writing women, and it literally says that, yeah, they said... Aaron Sorkin has been accused of only writing three different types of women. The kooky and hysterical archetype, the subservient to male intellect archetype, or the scold or dream girl archetype.
Yeah.
And the only exception in every show he's ever done, the only exception is CJ Craig, who was Alison Janney's character.
Yeah.
That's the only exception. And he's done
Alison Janney.
Oh, that was the lady who was running the press conferences, and they kept asking her about what outfits the first lady wearing. And she's like, oh,
she was my favourite character.
She's literally the best character in the whole show.
She's good.
Yeah, because I'm also just thinking a lot of our characters that Aaron Sorkin just... Like, the other episode I was thinking of doing was they were introducing a character who would be in the legal team whose role was pretty much just she's very sexy, and I just was realising, that probably wasn't going to be a good episode to have, especially because... I don't remember the plot line, but basically it's a chance for Robbo's character to be the knight in shining armour to save her from...
Yeah, I genuinely hate that.
Yeah, so I'm glad I didn't pick that episode then. Yeah.
I'll admit, it doesn't matter. I still got the same vibe that women were not portrayed very well in this show at all. It's great that we had quote-unquote strong women in this show. I wouldn't exactly call them that. I would just say that they are your token female, like token women.
But you're right. Like, you go through all of the women that were on that episode. They tried to portray them as strong, but they weren't.
Yeah. This is something that really drives me nuts. So this is a great episode that you brought to the table.
Because
we get to, once again, talk about my favourite topic. Women portrayed in TV.
Yeah.
Because, as we all know, the only decent female that was portrayed in TV for the longest time was the lady from Alien.
Sigourney Weaver.
Who was written as a male character and then just gone, oh, actually, let's get this chick to do it. And I do not understand how people gender their writing like straight off the bat, going, oh, yes, we need this character here is going to be a female character. I need the female media representative because that's a woman's job.
Yeah.
I do not understand that way of thinking when it comes to writing.
Yeah, also, I'm pretty sure it's a subtle hint to basically imply part of the reason she's there is because either she has the hots for Josh Lyman or Josh Lyman has the hots for her, and that's part of the reason why she's there because...
Could you imagine that show if it was written without gender in mind? If it was just media talks to, diplomat characters. And then you go, oh, okay, this person actually reads this script well. Okay, looks like media's a female.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Just writing people as people. This did not write people as people.
Yeah.
That really annoys me.
Kenzie's learning about the hero's journey and all of the different types of archetypal characters, and this is very much these are the people who run the White House. Now, what kind of archetypes can we slot them into?
I definitely feel like sometimes the characters are just empty vessels to be like, this is the character that would do this sort of thing, but their personality is a blank slate for whatever is necessary for the plot of the episode.
Yeah, kind of hate that. Is there anything that's come out now that you think would be the equivalent to this show?
No, because a lot of the stuff I can think of are ones that are a lot more cynical. And that's the thing.
Right,
This is very, very late 90s. It's like, especially because I'm a political nerd, so I can explain in detail, this makes sense because of blah, blah, blah. But a lot of it was the fact that it was a lot more optimistic compared to after 9/11 and after Trump took office, that you can't really do that sort of stuff now because there's so much cynicism,
They still do it in movies and stuff.
Yeah, but nothing with the cred. Like, this got basically an Emmy for everything every year.
And this
was the kind of stuff that would say America's great, the president's great, wouldn't even be remembered in a year or two.
Yeah.
This was part of the TV renaissance as well, this era. This is when you had actors that, if they were movie actors, they wouldn't humble themselves to do TV.
Yeah, Martin Sheen is humbling himself to do.
This was the era where they went, oh no, like, the writing and the shows that were being created in TV were actually better than doing movies, and some of them were then stepping. But then Rob Lowe was a headliner in this show, but I think he stepped away and came back, or did he step away?
I think he was guest starring in a couple of episodes.
Yeah. He got a bit shirty because the rumour was that, he thought it was his show. And it's like, no, this is an ensemble show. Yeah. And I think he got his nose out of joint that he didn't get as much face time as he thought he was going to get. And then just really didn't get a lot of work. And then had to redeem himself on another ensemble show, which was Parks and Rec.
Which I also found amusing, because I remember finding online somebody edited the Parks and Rec cast as the West Wing opening, just to
When you were talking about filibusters before we started, I was going to say the best filibuster of all time was Leslie Knope in A Pair of Roller Skates Needing to Pee. That's the only thing I know about filibusters. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
I feel like this was a very nostalgic show, though.
Yeah.
It felt very 90s.
I happily just did my own thing while listening to it in the background, and that felt nice. But when I tuned in, I hated it.
That's the thing.
Like a really bad podcast that you get enraged when you listen to it, but if it's just there as white noise, it's great.
That's the thing, because I think if I to explain, this is the plot line for all seven seasons, it may interest you enough to be curious about how they did it. But I'm not sure you'd actually want to watch the show, because it's, like, kind of...
It's not my vibe.
Yeah, I think also the thing we missed out on is there wasn't as much Iron saying the true bits of the arguments to win the arguments, haha, sort of stuff they always have in the show. I think we missed that a bit, but other than that, this is...
Not much running down hallways.
Running
down hallways with clipboards, that's what
I think. It's weird, I think this is one episode that I do remember watching... I remember that final bit, at least.
I remember that,
like, cleanly, and I think I watched that recently, too, which is weird. Unless my brain is, having this a problem.
You locked into the
nostalgia.
No,
just that one episode. I think I've watched it, not, like, recently, but I think I've seen it least in the last 5 years. Well, I know I've seen him talking on the phone. I feel like I have a recollection of someone going... This is what a good president would do, sort of thing. Like,
they do a lot of that.
We've been a bit positive about it so far. Jeanette, would you like to...
Have we both? Not really.
It's America. Jeanette already hates it.
America.
It's not Big Five.
I think, to be fair, not my vibe, that Baylor said, and white noise. And it seemed to me like it was just... words. It was very cleverly written words. But there was no depth.
No depth at all.
Very superficial. And it's just all this clever dialogue. The whole thing was just clever dialogue.
Yeah, that's Aaron Sorkin in a nutshell.
Pretty much.
There was nothing.
And I thought, I suspect they thought of it as being an intellectual show. But
they did.
But very highbrow. Absolutely not.
Pseudo intellectualism. I love that word. I love that word.
Yeah, because it happens when you have a show where it's like, oh, we're going to mention political processes, haha. And I just remember the one episode where President Bartlet rages at God in Latin.
Oh my gosh. I did find that scene very funny. I think I tuned in for it for a little bit, where they were like, oh, I've got a guy that can speak these two languages, English and Italian. Oh, well, I've got a guy that can speak these two languages, and then only to talk to someone of importance. It's like, how messed up do you have to be to not have that organized?
And it's also, and just being like, you're a freaking English monoglot, just shove it up your
thing. I noticed was going back to the subject of white noise, the one black character in the show had two scenes, and his scenes were very much attached to, oh, I have an issue that I can't solve and I need the white people.
Oh my god, white knighting. He's like the intern or something, isn't he? He's the president's intern. Yeah. So he's basically like a uni grad that they've hired on board.
Nothing else in the episode.
Were they like really basic problems?
He was trying to get in touch with like people.
His grandparents were in the path of the hurricane and he was worried.
His character was introduced literally because every other member of the cast was white.
The other
black character I can think of off the top of my head is one of the heads of the military who's in most of the episodes. He's the only other character who's prominent, who's in white. Actually, that's not true. There's also the president guy who's going to be the next president after Bartlett, who is Latino. But otherwise, it's
Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, otherwise, it's basically just mayonnaise everywhere. Yeah.
At least it's historical.
It's accurate.
I liked the conversation with, was it the Malaysian Prime Minister?
Indonesian,
that's it. When it was like, oh, did you hear we're having salmon? Yes. Do you like salmon? No. Did you hear we're having salmon? Like,
yeah, this is a guy who's been hired for his diplomatic skills. He's obviously not used to being not fawned all over.
Speaking of salmon. Food.
Salmon!
Makes
me, makes me want to have a hot dog real bad.
Mackenzie's just tuned out.
She says that line all the time at home.
Oh my god, Kenzie, tell us.
What did you think?
What do you think? Rate it as an emoji if you can't think of anything good to say.
It was just an ugh.
She's correctly holding her head.
I do think, don't take this personally. I think this is a really good one to bring up because there can't all be ones that we all love and fall over.
That's the thing. Like, I was thinking this would be a good show to have, but also I really enjoyed it when I watched it originally. And in retrospect, I hate it because of the America, because of the politics around it, because of the fact that it's, in retrospect, massively optimistic and utopian. Optimistic, naive and utopian.
Mm.
Yeah. I was like, this is an important bit of TV history that I think we should discuss. But also,
it's not exactly the same as this, but it's called Utopia, I think.
Australian one.
Genuinely, I think it's got similar vibes. It's not political at all, but it's still got that similar office vibes.
It's like the office.
Yeah, but it's not like of Australian government. Yes, Kenzie.
I got an emoji.
Okay. I'm ready to describe it. Oh yeah,
emojis.
Emojis.
There's the clothing ones, isn't there clothing? No, why would there be clothing? The emojis don't wear clothes.
Is there a t-shirt? And also emojis are like just a picture word pictures. Word pictures? No.
Close your eyes, Bella. No clothes.
Sorry, like emoji is a Japanese word.
Either the emoji that's yawning because I was really bored during this.
And you've put four of those.
A yawning emoji. Nice.
So four of them. Let's have a look. Okay.
And then also, as Suit and Tie, because I found that if it was like an office show, it would kind of be the same because it's as boring as like a documentary.
Yeah.
Did you find that all of the men in suits and ties looked interchangeable? Did you have trouble telling them apart?
Oh no, some of them had different bald patches.
I did have difficulty with some of especially like the older ones. Which one was the president, which one was just any other random old white guy.
This is like 7 episodes in, so you get the habit of like, oh, this is the guy and this is the other guy. Okay.
There's that guy. That's fair.
And then the other guy. And then the guy with the British accent comes in every so often and he has the British accent, so you can tell who he is.
And then there's little bits that I'd forgotten. I don't even know whether they'd been brought up at this point of time. Like when the chief of staff, it's like, oh, president's talking to chief of staff going, oh, where am I sitting? Oh, you're sitting with the other president. Where are you sitting? Oh, I'm sitting with you. And oh, where are the others sitting? Oh, they're on the fun table. And it's like, yeah, the chief of staff is an alcoholic who's been dry for years. Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, no, he's not at the fun table. He's at the stuffy table where no one drinks too much. He doesn't want to be around alcohol. So
it didn't bring us up this episode yet.
So it's coming up. It's these little kind of hints that you wouldn't know unless you know it's coming up. And I think the first time I would have watched it, I would have just gone, oh, yeah, he's with all the big wigs. He's at the stuffy table. No, he's purposely put himself on the stuffy table because he can't be where the fun people are drinking lots of wine and, you know, letting their hair down.
Yeah.
It's funny how you would... the Australian delegation.
It's funny that, well, that is how it's described as, right? Like, fun people drink lots of alcohol and unfun people don't. Honestly, at me when it's Friday night and I go play board games with my friends, because as far as I'm concerned, we get lit. With no alcohol. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hey, look, so what you're saying I should let myself into your book game night.
Angus, food, you still haven't decided.
This is
a dinner roll?
This is a rough one. This is a really...
I get plenty of suggestions.
I think seven really works, actually.
Yeah, but you don't like fish. This admittedly does feel like the American hot dog, because it's just there's nothing of interest... It sounds good. It sounds okay. You're like, hot dog,
Onions. Oh, like a Wendy's hot dog. Yeah, where you're like, really I'd like a Wendy's hot dog. And then you have one, you're like, absolutely.
An Australian Wendy's hot dog.
Yeah. An Australian, not an American hot dog.
No, well,
it is basically an American hot dog.
What but there's an Australian Wendy's, not the American Wendy's.
Real bad.
Is that... Oh, I can't remember her name.
It's a lady.
Do you want me to say it? It's Jennifer Coolidge.
It is Jennifer Coolidge.
Legally Blonde 2.
Oh,
you look like the 4th of July. It makes me want a hot dog real bad.
Like the 4th of July. Yeah, I haven't seen Legally Blonde 2. No, I started watching it. I hated it.
Yeah.
Didn't make you want a hot dog real bad.
Yeah.
Nope.
Anyway, later this year, we're going to have the thick of it, and we'll enjoy it a lot more. Okay. And unfortunately, if you're okay with having your daughter experience a lot of swearing, you can bring her there.
You know what? Oh,
she's the one that swears all the
time. Okay. So the thick of it, I know he came in the beginning and then I dumped him, but we're bringing my dad because my dad is obsessed with the thick of it.
Excellent.
Okay, yes. Cool. Okay. Yes.
That would be good.
He used to keep doing the Capaldi accent and repeating it. And I'm going, Dad, don't say any of that stuff to me. I don't want to hear that. He'd start rattling off these quotes and I'm like, I don't know the context of what you're talking about and I feel really uncomfortable. Yeah. Right, I think Dad might get an invite.
Yeah, cool.
I've told Adrian he's coming to Battlestar Galactica and he was like, do I have to? And I'm like, yeah, you do, sorry.
So that's coming up later this year on the Classic Cult TV Club. Stay tuned.
Bye. Pew, pew, pew. Why am I doing your job?
Smash.
Lisa.
Pew, pew, pew.
That was weak. We are not ending this.
Pew, pew, pew.
I don't know why you're doing that as the sign off. Baylor's about to read this list they've
Was it called when you have those word salads that you, word maps or
something? We used to have like work meetings. They go, we're going to do a word map. Come up with your word that describes. I'm like, why don't we not?
I'm just going on about Venn diagrams.
God. There's just a whole bunch of corporate... techno babble that's just it's not a good idea,
whereas this is just a drug induced stream of consciousness.
Stop random stuff.
It was a
top notch. Come up actors, anything famous for anything hardworking. Staff nerds episode, powerful, kind of hate it show, eloquent, fluent episode, is in detail, a lot of political running, Republicans being Democrats, very detrified role, night care, also awkward, 98 to 26, plot lines, a some looking at age badly, baldly, I don't know. I lost my groove.
I saw the best minds of my generation watching West Wing and Beatles.
Someone's supposed to be there playing the bass behind
Until next time.
That's what